I wanted to try to figure out how to take down a huge commercial property. I didn't know if it was going to be multifamily or an office building or what it was going to be. So I didn't know where to go at that point. I just started looking around, talking to people, networking. And I was advised early on, before I even took that first big deal down, was just to invest passively. To kind of, even if you are interested in being on the active side at some point in time, it's always a good idea to invest passively first. So I said, okay, let's do it.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Seth Bradley is a real estate entrepreneur and an expert at creating passive income while working as a highly paid professional. He's closed billions of dollars in real estate transactions as a real estate attorney, investor, and a broker. And he's also the managing partner of Law Capital Partners, a private equity firm focused on multifamily and opportunistic transactions. Seth, welcome to the show.
Sam, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it, man.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes to the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Where did I start, man? I started in Crossroads, West Virginia. I came from a blue-collar family, grew up like that. You know, it's been a journey trying to get over that kind of blue-collar mindset into kind of the entrepreneurial mindset and to stop trading your time for dollars. That's been a battle for me my entire life. I'm still dealing with that now. Went to law school, actually went to med school, got my MBA, and then I went to law school. So I've been every graduate school possible, ended up kind of going that traditional law route, got a big law firm job out of law school, worked in that for 6 years or so. And then in the meantime, while I was working, I started investing in single family real estate, wholesaling, kind of did the whole gambit of residential real estate and kind of worked my way up to larger multifamily, actually started investing passively first and then got in on the active side. I want to continue to build that business as well as my other businesses that I have as well outside of real estate.
Wow. That's a lot of steps and a lot of time spent studying. I mean, you've gone
11 years, man.
That's a long time. That's post high school, right?
Yeah. That's 11 years of college.
Right. Good grief, man. That's a long time, friend.
It's ridiculous. That's yeah. What it is.
And in the end, your ultimate goal is what?
Ultimate goal is, I think, similar to a lot of people, man. I just want freedom, flexibility, and fun, right? Freedom of your time, flexibility with your time. I don't shy away from working hard. I mean, that's instilled in me from the very beginning. I probably work more now than I ever did as a big law firm attorney. But you know as well as I do, when you start working for yourself, it's a lot different. And you don't mind putting in those 12 hours as opposed to working for the man and putting in 12 hours.
Yeah, man, that's absolutely true. It's a comment I don't think I've made because I've always worked for myself, but made in my adult life is like, oh man, is it 5 o'clock yet? It's like every day is like, oh crud, it's already five. How's this happening to me? I need more time.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I think back and I remember like going to the office and just being like dreading going to work, like waking up in the morning, just going, oh man, I got to get ready. I got to go to work. Got to put on my suit and tie. I got to go to work, go to the office, you know, chug some coffee because I'm going to fall asleep at my desk if I don't, you know, having 50 bosses, just trying to like keep my door closed, leave me alone. Like, I just remember those days and just think, you know, that was crazy. It was crazy to go through, put yourself through something like that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. When, or do you still use your law degree? You're still practicing law in some capacity, right?
Absolutely, man. I mean, I use it every day, especially in my real estate investing. I mean, when I partner with people on the GP side, I'm typically doing some, if not all of the attorney work on the deal, whether that's the, you know, the securities work and this quote unquote dirt work, the real estate attorney work. And that's how I kind of partner with people, or that's kind of how I've developed to partner with people. So yeah, I use that every single day. You know, I talk to attorneys all the time and they're kind of, you know, they get pigeonholed into a box and they're like, you know, I'm a securities attorney or I'm a litigator. And they think, what else can I do now? Because they've been doing this for so long. I'm like, when you learn to think like a lawyer and think, you know, about all the liabilities, the risks, and kind of that balance, the delicate balance you have with business, you can use that in anything, man, any endeavors that you go about. And that's not just business, but that's also just with life and relationships and everything else.
Right, man. That's really intriguing. So when you come to a deal, do you come to the deal and say, hey, look, I'm going to take over or I'll handle the paperwork, the legal side of this? How do you structure that? Like, do you say, hey, you know what? You can just roll my fees into the deal. Do you, I mean, what does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, when I come to the deal, at first, I would prefer to just kind of act as quote unquote, this isn't exactly right, but in-house counsel, so to speak, for our kind of our little LLC that we're going to form, and then just kind of farm out the work. So I will work, I'll find the securities attorney that I like working with, the real estate, the local real estate attorney I like working with, and kind of oversee their work, put, you know, an extra set of eyes on things and just kind of manage them. Because a lot of times, you know, you hire attorneys, but you don't necessarily know what they're doing. You're just like, hey, get this done for me. And hopefully that's the right. I trust that you're doing it right. But it, there's some value if you have somebody on your team that actually knows if they're doing it right or not. So that's what I prefer to do. But I will take down some of the work. I will do all the work if I need to, if that's what the team needs. It really just depends. And then, you know, there's all kinds of ways to structure it. I mean, you can structure it anyway from, you know, adding some, you know, I'll get some equity for doing this much work, or, you know, maybe we'll roll some sort of a fee in there.
Right. That's really, really intriguing. What are some things that you feel like you see or have seen in the legal doc preparation process where you go, or even when they get the finished product to you and you say, you know what, this isn't right, that maybe the ordinary investor or the ordinary sponsor just wouldn't catch?
Well, a lot of times people try to get away without doing offering documents at all, right? They're like, oh, well, we've only got a couple people, a couple of money investors in the deal, and they're not really doing anything. You know, we'll just structure it like a JV, and that's not the right way to do it. If there's any passive money people involved and they're not taking an active role in the business, it should be structured like a syndication. It should, there, that's an offering. So it should be structured that way. So a lot of people, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world, you know, if you have one or two people doing that and just coming from an attorney. So take it with a grain of salt, but you know, people do it every day. We'll put it that way. People do it all the time, but it's not the right way to do it. And there are other times when it's a little bit more egregious. Well, they'll have, you know, a lot of money investors involved and they don't bother putting together the offering documents, or they think they can just find something off the internet. Securities is not something you want to mess with. You want to have an attorney involved. You want to have your documents in place and your ducks in a row.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. What are some, I mean, because there's even inside of getting your docs together, there's still, I mean, you can pay anywhere from $2,000 to $30,000 to get a set of syndication docs put together. And some come with certain bells and whistles or certain insurances that your attorneys may cover or may hold or not hold and things like that. Like, how does someone make the right choice on that front?
Yeah. You really got to talk to the attorney that's going to be involved, ask them how involved they're going to be, ask them if they're going to be able to make deal specific changes, or they're just going to give you a template and say, here, this is all we're going, this is all you're going to get for $3,000. Because there are services like that. We're like, hey, we'll give you our templates. We'll fill in a couple of the blanks, but there's not going to be any, you know, you're not going to call me up five times before this deal closes and give you an hour of my time. That's usually what you get for those $2,000 or $3,000. On the other end of the spectrum, it goes even higher than that, man. If you start dealing with DLA Piper, which is the firm that I worked for a while, you know, that's the number three law firm in the world. Their fees are upwards of $75,000, $100,000 for a typical syndication. But man, if you haven't worked with them before, you might not realize all the things that they'll do that other securities and real estate attorneys don't do. For instance, one thing I know that people are surprised, I was actually surprised at it myself. I've worked at law firms before, but DLA Piper kind of takes it to a whole new level. I mean, they're looking at each and every piece of marketing material you put out there, not just the legal docs, but let's say it's a one-page, you know, deal summary, and you say a factual, a quote-unquote factual statement about, you know, the city that you're investing in. Well, that should have a reference. That needs to have a citation attached to it. And that citation, that reference, when you check it, it better not be the Chamber of Commerce for that city who kind of just makes it sound really good no matter what. They want to make everything sound great. It's got to be a legit third-party neutral reference that you're citing from, just in case that somewhere down the line, think about it, if an investor loses their money and they're pissed off and they say, you know what? I read that one-page summary once upon a time, and I read about that fact about the city, and that really changed my mind about whether or not I wanted to invest in this. And I depended on that. Maybe that's probably not grounds to win, but that's just one of maybe many things that they might list, and you want to make sure you have all those things covered.
Wow. Yeah, and it's amazing in our Sue Happy society, you know, that's the granular level of detail that you have to go to now to really protect yourself.
Right.
What about
it's
insurance?
Kind of sad, but yes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what about insurances and things like that, you know, your attorney should be carrying?
Yeah. Insurance policies, you've got it. And usually, you know, if I'm the attorney on the deal, I'm going to defer, at least with the insurance stuff specifically, to the insurance agent, to your, you know, your insurance consultant. You know, there's obviously going to be some legal jargon in there that needs to be reviewed as well. But we work hand in hand with the legal consultant themselves.
Got it. Or got it.
The That's insurance, really, yeah. The insurance consultant.
Gotcha. Okay. That's really, really interesting. Seth, one of the things you mentioned early on was that, you know, the idea of not trading time for money, that kind of blue collar, which is, you know, I was below blue collar raised. And so this is a common struggle we share in that you're always, you were taught to work hard, but you weren't taught to work smart. Right. And so talk to us about that struggle for you. And then what do you see the path forward? What's the way out for you?
Yeah. And just a little background. My mom's a retired school teacher. My dad's a retired coal miner, typical kind of West Virginia careers, you know, provided for my family. But, you know, again, worked hard, maybe not the smartest. You know exactly what you're putting into what to put getting back out. You know, my dad destroyed his body working in the coal mines, you know, for decades. And it's crazy what you sacrifice for a couple bucks. So what you do learn from that blue collar background is how to work hard, right? You learn what it takes to put in a good day's work and to put your head down and work. We learned how to do that. But at the same time, there's that double-edged sword. And that's that, you know, maybe putting your head down and working as hard as you possibly can for as long as you possibly can isn't necessarily the best and most efficient way to do so. Trading your time for money isn't necessarily the best way and most efficient way to make money. You need to figure out how to find some sort of an asymmetrical return there on your time. So, you know, I went to med school first because I thought that was the best job I could get was being a doctor, trading your time for money. And then after I didn't make it there, I went for a year and about 2 weeks into my second year before I just dropped out because I hated it and I knew I didn't want to do it. I went to law school because I thought that was the second best job I could get, trading time for money, which was being an attorney. And it took being around the right people. I think that's what it comes down to, is exposing yourself to the right people as early as possible. If I would have been exposed to some business folks a little earlier in my career, perhaps I would have seen the light a little bit sooner. But, you know, when I was an attorney, I was working with, you know, real estate investors as clients, and I was just, you know, seeing them come into the office and just realizing that they're not, you know, these crazy people that you put on a pedestal, like Warren Buffett or something. You know, it's not Warren Buffett walking to the office. It's just everyday guys like you and me that are taking down these $50 million plus properties, and you're advising them on, you know, what to do and what not to do. And after a while, I started thinking, I want to stop getting paid on this side of the table and be on the equity side and start living life like them, because right. they're doing it the right way, right? So that was kind of the mindset shift, was being around those types of people that I was not around when I was growing up.
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. And that's, I mean, that goes back to the network. Your network is your net worth idea. And it's amazing how just surrounding yourself, you don't have to have like amazing conversations. It can be just, you just watching and being in the company of other people who are doing great things. You go, okay, that was really cool. What was your transition when you said, hey, you know what? I want to do what they do. How'd you do it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I started small. I started investing in single family rentals. My first one was a house hack into a duplex and lived in one half, rented the other half out. And I went from there and then started doing some fix and flips, mostly from a distance at that point. And I kind of got just bogged down by it, right? I'm trying to do fix and flips on single family houses from 2,500 miles away, working with low level contractors, low level property managers. And it's just taking a lot of my time and my energy and my decision-making that, you know, you only have so much decision-making power in each day, and it's just sucking the life out of me. And eventually it took away from my career. I ended up getting fired from my last full-time legal job because not only because I was doing, you know, all this stuff on the side, but then, you know, it was just taken away from my concentration and being able to devote my, you know, time and effort into being a great attorney. I had to worry about whether this contractor is trying to stiff me for $200. And that's the kind of stuff you have to deal with residential, you know, 1 to 4 units. When you start working your way up and start working with commercial contractors, commercial vendors, things get a lot better because they have a reputation to defend and they care about, rather than some of those guys that are doing the fix and flips and you're trying to find the cheapest help.
Right, man. I wonder how many, just a picture for the rest of us, like how many of us would get fired from jobs that we personally hold inside of our own companies right now because we're trying to do too many things at once, right?
Yeah.
Like how many people would come in and audit me and be like, yeah, you're fired for that and for that and for that because you're sucking at all of them. And then you're not getting the thing done you're supposed to be getting done.
Right.
So I think that's really, really intriguing. How did you do your first deal? Did you partner with somebody on a larger property? What did that look like?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a commercial real estate attorney, so I wanted to jump right in. I wanted to try to figure out how to take down a huge commercial property. I didn't know if it was going to be multifamily or an office building or what it was going to be. So I didn't know where to go at that point. I just started looking around, talking to people, networking. And I was advised early on, before I even took that first big deal down, was just to invest passively, to kind of, even if you are interested in being on the active side at some point in time, it's always a good idea to invest passively first. So I said, okay, let's do it. So I invested passively a few times, kind of got a feeling for it. And I do totally agree with that pathway. I think even if you ultimately want to be on the active side, even seeing it from a passive investor's perspective first, because at some point you will have your own investors to know where they're coming from, what they care about, it will help you in the future. So that's kind of how I got started. And those were all multifamily deals to begin with.
Right. Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And that's the way I started out as well in larger deals, was going in as a passive investor. You get a front row seat. Like, you get to see everything. You get to ask everything. You get to find out what you like, what you don't like, what you're going to do differently. You get to really learn all the vernacular.
Yep.
I mean, yes, it's on your dime, but you're getting paid to do it. So it's like, oh, okay. That's a very different educational experience maybe than, say, college. So that's really, really intriguing, man. I love that. And so, you know, one of the things you said here in your bio that I read there in the beginning is that you guys are doing multifamily and opportunistic acquisitions. What is in the bucket of opportunistic?
For us right now is RV parks. We're really looking. We haven't gotten one yet, but we've done a couple of due diligence walks. We're constantly, you know, underwriting, you know, how hard it is to get a deal nowadays, and we want it to meet certain metrics. So we haven't gotten one yet, but it's just a matter of time before we take the first one down. But I've got a group that we're looking at RV parks specifically, just based on, you know, better returns and what we're seeing kind of in the market, and multifamily is just getting really compressed right now and competitive. So it's even more difficult in multifamily to find a deal. So we're looking at other opportunities like RV parks.
Man, that's great. I love that. Yeah. And I think that's part of the pivoting process, is where you go, okay, there's maybe better opportunity over here. There's still opportunity in multifamily. It's just a lot harder to find. And of course, you know, for every 10 people investing in multifamily, there's maybe a half of a person investing in RV parks. So
exactly.
That's really, really cool. Seth, yeah. I've enjoyed this. Thanks for taking the time to break down your story. Tell us a little bit about what you see, you know, in the future for you guys, kind of your backstory on, you know, digging out from the blue collar mindset and background, and then really going long here in commercial real estate. And then what else to look for, of course, in the attorney and legal side of things. So I think you bring a variety of skill sets to the table, and it's been a blast to have you on the show and learn from you. Let's jump here into the last couple of questions. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I'm talking to a lot of people, law students. So law students are actually looking and seeing my podcast, and they're asking, well, hey, you know, should we go to law? And I don't, like, continue into big law, or, you know, pursue that career. I mean, I just give them a realistic picture of what to look for and what you can expect. And I tell them that, you know, I'm not telling you not to be a lawyer. I'm telling you to go ahead and be a lawyer, because you've already made it this far, and you probably, you know, have some sort of a passion for it, I would hope. And, you know, but maybe keep those alternative investing strategies in the back of your mind, because you'll be making some good money soon. So maybe use that active income, turn it into passive income. So if one day you wake up and you're not happy going to the office, you can say, you know what, I'm going to bill less hours this year. And you can do that because you have other income streams to fall back on.
Right, man. Yeah, that's great. Seth, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Check out the podcast. Go to passiveincomeattorney.com and you'll get access to everything from there, man. You'll get access to, you know, our deals and our investor club and the podcast and free content and all that stuff. So that's probably the best place to find, to get started looking me up.
Man, that's awesome. Seth, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
All right, brother. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.